Blog Talk Radio.
Come on, baby, make it hot. Ride the cock till you hit the spot. Come on, baby, make it hot.
Doing it doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yay, bow, wow, yippee yo, yippee.
And we're back. Professor Val here, all by myself. I can't even say it seriously. Dr. Mark should be approaching soon. Dr. Jeb, we have a big show tonight. We have Dr. Diadamo. He's going to be calling in about, 8:20 or so. And he is the author of the New York Times bestseller, Eat Right for Your Type, which is a book about blood type and foods. And he's got a new book out now, which is the Genotype Diet, which he's going to talk about a little bit later today. In the meanwhile, I was thinking maybe we would go on to the other phone and call Dr. Mark. I think that would be a great idea. All right. I'm going to grab my cell phone and give him a buzz. Okay, so if anyone would like to give us a call tonight, the number is 646-478-4847, and we'll be taking calls while Dr. Diadamo is here and afterward, and hopefully we will have quite a few callers tonight since he's a popular guy. All right, I'm going to dial Dr. Mark on the cell phone, which gets very little signal here, and let's see what happens. This is very exciting. All right, here we go. Ah, it's ringing. It's ringing. This is great.
Bueller. Bueller. Bueller.
He's sick. My best friend's sister's boyfriend's brother's girlfriend heard from this guy who knows this kid is going with the girl who saw Ferris pass out at 31 Flavors last night. I guess it's pretty serious.
I love that. Okay, so he's not there. We need to talk about some current events going on. There's some craziness in the world. We're going to pull it up right now. First thing I want to know is, what is going on with these parents being threatened to be put in jail because they're not giving their kids the inoculations for the flu? Would somebody please explain that to me? I would love to know. I'm sure Dr. Mark's going to have a few things to say about that, as well as our other illustrious guests this evening. And any second, and Dr. Mark's going to be here. It's going to be very, very exciting. I know he's calling in now.
I'm going to go call the psychic hotline. They'll know what to do.
That's right. Any second now. Here it is. Are you guys waiting as breathlessly as I am? I know you are. Okay, here he is. This is, there we go, very good. All right, so anyway, about these flu shots while he's calling in. Someone please explain to me why a parent is not allowed to make a decision about their child's health. Somebody out there has got to call me and tell me why parents are getting in trouble for not giving flu shots. Dr. Mark.
Yes.
Hello, darling.
A show this evening, yes.
It's so nice to hear from you.
Don't even get me started. You know, the bell tolls twice and all that stuff. So I'm going to request a re-theme.
Oh, all right. And while I'm getting that up, let me just tell you that since 3 o'clock I've been on the phone with a remote computer guy who is still working on my other computer as we speak. And it's been a long day. And here we go.
This is...
Come on, baby, make it hot. Ride the cock till you hit the spot. Come on, baby, make it hot.
Ooh, ooh. Doing it doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yay, bow, wow, yippee yo, yippee. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yay, bow.
Are you grooving?
Now I'm here. So
there you go.
I need that.
I was just yelling about the parents who were getting in trouble about the flu shots.
Oh, okay. Well, don't get me started because that is a topic, as a chiropractor, I have been familiar with for years. It's interesting. Maybe you can explain this to me. You're a teacher and all.
Yes.
The logic behind it was that the unvaccinated kid was going to be a trouble for the vaccinated kid.
Uh-huh.
Right? That was the mindset?
Mm-hmm.
I never understood that. Isn't the vaccinated kid bulletproof? Isn't that the whole idea?
That's what they claim.
Yeah, and they always with the, oh, don't let that safe, that hasn't been, you know. It just made no sense to me. And to this day, I get the same argument. Maybe our guest later can give us a little clue about that. I'm not sure. It's one of those ones that just,
I don't know.
I never followed the reasoning, and I don't understand the mindset anyway. But
you know what's weird? In the college, you can't get into class without having all your inoculations. Well, nobody checked me. I'm there breathing on them. Does that matter?
No, well, yeah, that's true. They never asked. They never just checked to see the teacher's been.
No, just the students. As if the teacher can't breathe something vile onto a student. I don't know. Well, I have a rule in my classroom. If you are sick and you show up, you are in so much trouble. You need to get out and go home. I don't want anybody's germs in the classroom if they don't have to be there. You know, I will tell you what you missed. Get the hell out of my room. But they get it. They never come to class sick.
Well, that whole germ theory thing, as you know, is...
you don't care about the germs.
I really don't worry about the one-cell organisms and their lifespan. More about the host. More interested in the host.
Yeah, well, there's that. I don't know.
It's one of those deals. Well, here we are. We got a big shoe tonight. Hopefully, if you're new to the opening of our show, it's always the exciting part. If we're going to be on the air, we're going to go as usual. It's all kind of downhill from there. But the number here is 646-478-4847. And tonight we have a special guest. And we're going to be getting to him in a couple of minutes. And until then, we have a couple of things to discuss to get in the mood. And I need some friends for that. Let's see. A couple of new things. Since, you know, with all the traveling going on this week, it's been interesting looking at the news and people stuck in airports and things like that. So I figured I'd open up with them. And if you have been out there in the wilds, especially in the New York City area, putting up with things, this is a big travel day, so I just want to get this going here.
It's the flight situation. Simple. There's no way on earth we're going to get out of here tonight. We'd have more luck playing pickup sticks with our butt cheeks than we will getting a flight out of here before daybreak.
There you go.
Nice. Well, my parents were in bumper-to-bumper traffic from Westchester to Putnam, an hour and a half. And that's going really in the opposite direction you'd expect the traffic to be going.
Oh, no, it's an ocean. One out of 10 delays in the country starts here.
So
our biggest export in the tri-state area is delay. So if you're waiting for someone, they had the thing on, I think it was yesterday afternoon, like Los Angeles had gotten so congested that they just announced, like, everyone's going to be late. Like, you know, just, if you're waiting for someone, someone in the LA area, they're going to be late. Just, you know, it's so... They've saturated the market. There's something like a couple hundred extra flights that this airspace around here can handle that's going on. So,
Very nice.
Plus, you throw a little weather in there. So it's always a, you know, even growing up, you know, going back to college, it was the biggest rush to overcome the traffic. I think that's why it's like a big party night for the college crowd when they get home, just to celebrate making it, you know. So it's like...
tonight is the worst.
Mm-hmm.
I used to work in a bar, and I used to actually manage a gas station when I was like 17. And this was the absolute worst night to be either place. It's the biggest drinking night of the year, and it's the biggest gassing up night of the year because everybody's getting the hell out of Dodge tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Go visit and eat turkey, go into the turkey coma, get gaseous, and then go home.
Yeah, it had that quality of almost like... last day of school when you were a kid, you know, this day and the day you got back for Christmas break was a big deal, too.
Yep.
The finals and all that. And speaking of that, you'll be wrapping up your tenure a couple of weeks at Manhattanville College.
That's right. We have, I think the last day of school before the break is the 7th of December, which is, of course, Pearl Harbor Day. And then I will no longer be walking the halls there, so a lot of my kids are not very happy about that.
Well, you had a little practice a couple of days ago. I get to go to the chat version of your class. When of course, the first sign of snow, you basically called it up and said, hey, going in.
That's right.
Your policy still sticks there.
Yep.
All right, well, we're going to be getting ready for just a couple minutes.
Fix your phone there. You got all fuzzy on me.
Colleen, just to give you an update.
I hear someone else talking on your line.
But no,
we can't hear you at all.
Back.
I hear a woman talking through your phone. Get on the landline, quick. Oh my God! I can't hear you at all. Hello? Come on.
That he wanted to know about them.
Mark, help!
Down payment. Do they need that for a co-op? Since he was asked that question.
Who is this person talking?
I think so. You know, to John. Call my best.
Can you hear that?
So no, that's been taken care of.
All right, we're going to have to hang up and call back. And I'm back. Yes, I am back. And there's no more fuzz on the line, so I think we're good. So when Dr. Mark gets back here, we'll be in business. This has been an interesting run on the Blog Talk Radio. I don't know if that was his phone doing it or if we had some cross line from Blog Talk or I don't know. But hello, Blog Talk people, if you're out there, please fix this. Okay, we're good, and I see that the Bean is calling in on the second line here. Are you there? All right.
Kitchen table. We have my daughter, Sarah, I think is there.
Yep, she's there. I'm going to... You got her?
Okay. Yep. All right, well, howdy, regular. Here we are. How you doing there, Sarah?
Fine. You wrote the wrong number on the paper.
Thank you. Thank you for throwing me straight under the bus. That's perfect. All right, let's get right to it, because we have had an exciting 12 minutes of broadcasting, but the audience is just can't wait to get through this. So let's start with what are we eating tomorrow? What is the Thanksgiving menu at the Philippi's this year?
I don't know.
Ah, thank you.
Oh, I know. I remember.
Okay, good.
We're having turkey.
No surprise. Yeah.
We're having mashed potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
Having stuffing.
Okay, bread stuffing.
Asparagus. What else? Mm-hmm. Cranberry sauce, but we had to buy you the jelly one.
That's right.
That's gross. And then we made our own, like, homemade stuff.
Mm-hmm. Could you walk away from the computer? I think you get a little interference there.
What, Mom? Oh, we're having chocolate cream pie.
Ooh.
All right, I didn't know about that. Okay.
Oh, and then the pumpkin, gooey pumpkin cake. But you.
I'll be stepping away from that. Okay.
Yeah, you'll be watching football.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's that's pretty much the overview. Bread stuffing, right?
I don't what. Yeah,
bread stuffing.
Mom is
okay.
Making it.
All right. Whatever. All right. So let's get an idea. How do you rank the Thanksgiving holiday compared to say Halloween? Then you got Christmas coming up. Then of course my birthday.
Okay, look.
Yeah.
Look.
What's your favorite holiday coming
Halloween
up here?
Halloween makes you puke because you eat too
what?
Much candy.
Well, what's your favorite? I don't care about the puking part. What's
listen,
your favorite
listen,
holiday?
I'm telling you everything.
Look, don't do that. Just what is your favorite holiday?
Listen to me. Thanksgiving I like
this
to eat.
This is the Onto portion of the program.
On Christmas I open my presents, so I like to eat and I'll stay. I like, but I like Christmas a lot because then I get a lot of stuff.
So you like Christmas more than your birthday?
Well, my birthday.
Your birthday's New Year's Day, so.
But it doesn't matter because it's like.
So Christmas is your favorite one out of the whole bunch of ones we're gonna have here?
Yeah.
All right. So let's get to the point here. What are you thankful for this year?
I don't know.
Well, when you bow your little head tomorrow and say grace, what are you grateful for from this year to last year? So that you grew a little bigger, that, you know, your soccer team.
I grew a little bigger? Okay.
Well, you know, whatever. Well, just give me something.
I don't know.
The I don't know part is not helping me. You're not grateful for anything from this year to last year? I think you better count your blessings there. There's a lot of kids that aren't going to have turkey and stuffing and all that stuff you just mentioned tomorrow, right?
But turkey's good.
I understand. Well,
some people are going to have ham or chicken.
Well, right. And we're thankful we're not in Arizona. That's another one. We could throw that one out there. I'm very grateful. I'll be saying.
Guess what? Grandma's in California with Aunt Denise.
That's another thing to be thankful for. See? We got like five things.
Yeah, that's only on your side.
It is nice.
My other grandparents are in Austin.
Right. Okay. We got the family covered.
And they're gonna see John's goats, and
Ooh.
Their donkeys, and their horses, and their chickens.
Yeah. Well, then again, more gratefulness for me.
Hey.
So nothing. You're thankful for nothing.
I don't know.
You know, I asked you this question about 12 hours ago. You could come up with at least an attempt at an answer, no?
I was mad 12 hours ago.
Oh, yeah, I see. We'll put that on layaway. All right, well, maybe next year you could tell us what you're thankful for this year. I don't know. I don't understand.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Okay, so we're going to get ready for our guest now, and we'll put you on hold, and you can listen to the show on the phone, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, thanks for joining us, Bean.
See you later, Sarah.
And
bye.
Happy Thanksgiving, and we will see you soon.
Oh, I remember what I'm thankful for.
Oh, go ahead, by all means.
I'm thankful for Chris, my gecko.
The gecko.
Of course.
We've covered it all, folks. Now she's down to another species. All right. Thanks for joining us. We'll get you on again for a Christmas holiday review. And that was my daughter Sarah.
Can I wait.
The judges will accept that.
What was that, Sarah? Sorry.
Can I tell you something that I'm unthankful for?
Uh oh.
Go ahead.
I'm unthankful for Sugar's face.
Oh, the cat, yes. And, well, we have to deal with that. But thank you for sharing.
Nice. And my finger.
Oh, then your injured finger. Okay, we'll say a prayer for all that tomorrow, okay?
Yes. And can I tell you all the colors my finger is?
No.
It's yellow,
well, maybe next time.
Black, and purple, and red, and green.
Thank you.
That's nice.
Green.
All right, we're going to stick on hold now because we're going to talk to Dr. D, okay?
Okay.
Love you, Bean.
Tell him I said hi.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
All right, I just sent you something, but it was the wrong thing here. Do you see the phone number there?
Yes, I see him. Okay, on the phone with us now to bring some sanity to the proceedings tonight, we have Dr. Peter Diodamo, and I'm looking for the horn here. If you find it, let it go. It will mark the beginning of the sanity tonight.
Oh, God. Let's see, where is it?
You do it every week. I don't know where the heck it is.
I don't know, but we have a couple of lines here now.
Yes, I see.
All right, let me see. Where is it? Oh, wait. Nope. Here it is.
Okay, so let's see which one of these is Peter. All right, you're on here at Blog Talk Radio. Are you our special guest?
Hi.
Hi. I'm not sure if you're Peter or not.
I am.
Hey! Listen, we've had a very rough start already.
I already got to redial in. We're here on Free Blog Talk Radio getting the most out of the equipment. So thank you for joining us, Peter. My God, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Okay, so we have a lot of questions lined up for you here, and let's get right to it because you have been hard at work writing computer programs and doing all kinds of fancy things that it sounds painful. Actually, the amount of research you did to uncover all this stuff, and if people are familiar with your work, let's give them a kind of a nutshell. This is book number what, 16?
If you were to just count like unique books,
mm-hmm.
it would be about 7 or 8.
Okay.
And then some of the other ones, I think that brought the number up to about 18 or so, are actually
wow.
just kind of various spin-offs of the other ones, where people
yeah.
took parts of the books and made sub-books of other books.
Wow.
I think I've written about, well, let's see, I've written about 13 books, I think, that are unique books.
Wow. I mean, I struggle getting through an email once in a while to get these things done. So
yeah.
I have my own problems. But so the big news is this new book, The Genotype Diet, is this application of this concept of epigenetics. So I'm curious, just talking behavior, how much of our behavior is influenced by what you describe as this volume control of our genes?
Well, certainly I think you could look at things like hemisphere dominance.
Mm-hmm.
Probably things that you might consider the more basic or the so-called limbic functions, you know, the things that sort of are relatively primitive emotions, rage or
mm-hmm.
Pleasure seeking, probably some aspects of impulse characteristics, impulsivity, risk taking are probably also related to it, simply because these are reflections of either an anticipatory type of coding that might occur based upon what the mother or the placenta or the fetus senses as a desirable trait in the environment to come. Or sometimes it's even just the result of instability that occurs in the development of the fetus, and sometimes just changes with regard to what biologists call fluctuating asymmetry,
mm-hmm.
which is
yeah.
how much the left side of you is like the right side of you.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with that pattern. Being as if you know, full disclosure, you know, Peter's taking care of my son for 13 years. He's been revolving around the sun, and he is probably the most asymmetrical kid you've ever met. Came in on a bumpy flight, and it's been all the while to get him back in the middle of the field there. So let's jump right in.
I think his particular journey is
mm-hmm.
is
mm-hmm.
as you know unique as his take on the world and. You know, I suspect that basically that's a force that basically I think we translate from a pejorative sense and say that's unstable. But you know, from a creative or expression standpoint, it's really hard to say who's got the better hand dealt to them.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's jump right in. Let's get a thumbnail of these six genotypes, and then maybe give the listeners like one key thing they can do to impact their diet or exercise and avoid some of the pitfalls as we get into the holidays. So let's start off with genotype one, the hunter.
Well, some of your listeners are familiar with my work in blood type.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I spent years looking at the various ABO blood groups and then a subtype of the blood groups called the secretor polymorphism, which can turn, sort of is like the volume control on your blood type.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, one of the characteristics of the first genotype hunter is largely characteristics that are sometimes shared by blood type O in its more kind of extreme case. And matter of fact, it's one of the few genotypes that you do essentially have by being one blood type or another. Basically, what the idea of the genotypes are is, I guess it's a shortage of the term genetic archetype or
mm-hmm.
epigenetic archetype. And for the listeners to understand what epigenetics is I don't know, maybe they do already. You know, you've probably taken them through this whole exercise.
Well, yeah, we've kind of briefed them on it, but basically, in a nutshell, what you describe it is sort of that volume control on your genes that, you know, you have your genetic code, and then you have these genes that are switching on and off, and the epigenetics is kind of an overarching thing that you describe as this these changes that are happening after the pattern's been set to kind of set the volume control of what you talked about.
Right. It's a great analogy, and really what it is from a developmental standpoint is how you get from a genetic pattern to a phenotype. In other words,
mm-hmm.
it's how do you go from the blueprint to the construction site?
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, that's the difference between, let's say, looking at a bunch of genes and saying, okay, this is what ought to be, and then looking at the person and going, gee, that looks nothing like you would have thought from looking at the genetics straight, run up on the person. And the reason being is that, you know, often the genetic plan is not like a blueprint, and any engineer will tell you that architects put all sorts of things in blueprints and never get put into the building.
Huh.
But the reality of the whole thing is that you have different kind of contingencies that come along. So the important thing that the listeners should understand is that these genotypes are really a path to phenotype.
Mm-hmm.
There, in other words, that process of how you started off at the point of conception with a genetic hand, and then how you wound up actually being you. And this was paraphrased by really one of the founders of the concept, a guy named Waddington, as a sort of travel through what he called an epigenetic landscape. And to understand this, he kind of said, imagine taking a ball or a marble and perching it on top of a mountain, and then watching how the ball essentially went down the mountain through various valleys and then sub-valleys and then sub-valleys until eventually it came to a resting place that would be your ultimate phenotype. The phenotype is your physical expression.
Mm-hmm.
And the point being that every time you went through one valley, you made a choice to go from one valley versus another, you really couldn't roll the ball back up and go into another valley because you didn't like the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And so in essence, each step is a series of choices or occurrences. And that's where these epigenetic archetypes come from. They come from an analysis of all the various permutations of how you could wind up having made a choice and where it would take you and what the consequences would be.
Well, that's the thing that jumped out at me looking at the material, is that this programming, this epigenetic programming, your parents pass on not just their genes, but their distinctive style of programming this and these patterns of silencing the genes or encouraging them to speak, as you say, almost giving them almost like a terrain or a kind of a genetic cowlick to have a tendency to adapt a certain way. And that's why children conceived during times of famine are going to have a different genotype, and then they come out in the environment, all of a sudden, wow, we get all these carbohydrates to eat, and they wonder why they get obese. I mean, it just seems like there's almost like a rewriting of the concept of, oh, you got your genes, you fix with your genes, and that's it. This epigenetic aspect gives the environment a little fair shake to speak here and say, how does that influence people? And the fact that you can inherit in almost kind of imprint, an environmental influence is something new.
Actually turns out to put a whole new spin on inheritance and kind of explains to a certain degree why a lot of people in our industry always look and say, well, echinacea doesn't work the way it used to when I was a young doctor. That's what Bastier always used to say. And basically, echinacea just didn't work the same way anymore. A lot of the people who practice homeopathy will tell you that homeopathy doesn't work on as many people as it used to. I think a lot of the notions of what we are understanding to be the consequences of modern living really are not the consequences of the environment that we're in now, but rather maybe the consequences of the environment that our grandparents were in. And how they dealt with it and how we're dealing with the consequences of how they dealt with it.
Yeah, on the phenotypical side, people's response to body work, it used to be more from injury and direct trauma, and now you're dealing with chemical toxicity, physical overload from things like computers, and the way the brain is bombarded with information developmentally affects the posture of these developing spines. A lot of things are changing as far as just that template goes, too. So let's just run through these genotypes quick, and we'll take some calls. We've got that first one, the hunter described.
Yeah, hunter is basically a long, lanky, highly stressed-out person with general tendencies towards being relatively andric. So in other words, they tend to spend a lot of their prenatal time essentially in a more androgenic environment.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to have more growth factors. So their body type is generally very elongated. They're masculine even if they are if they're female. They even tend to be somewhat still masculine. They tend to stress out. This is a genotype that essentially has the really major conditioning problems with the HPA axis, so they tend to have a lot of problems with stress in terms of its effects on the adrenals and the pituitary.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they tend to have gluten sensitivities. They tend to have compromised gut function. Of course, I'm just throwing this out. I would tend to believe this would just go flying over people's heads, but a lot of these things basically are the result of interactions that occur that take place one-to-one with these things.
Mm-hmm.
Genotype 2 is called a gatherer. Again, it's predominantly a genotype of blood type O, but there's also blood type B as well. It's a thrifty genotype. The hunter is what's called a reactive or a responder genotype. It's a genotype whose bias is towards a reactionary or pro-inflammatory type.
Mm-hmm.
The gatherer is more thrifty, so it's more of a metabolic type. These are the people, like you said before, the ones who were born during famine and then come out and discover, gee, there's not a famine out here. If anything, there's a whole lot of calories. So what happens is they're the ones who come out genetically programmed for not getting enough food and then put in the presence of an abundant source of food, actually over-accumulate it. So these are your obese diabetics. They tend to be highly estrogenized. They tend to have characteristic leg length issues. They tend to have a tendency towards their index fingers being longer than their ring fingers. So they tend to be sort of in an environment that's more estrogenic. They tend to have more difficulties with the more estrogenizing xenobiotics that you see with pesticides and vinyls and things.
And the age of putting the patch on, all those things that are going on, with that should just play into this lovely, huh?
Well, this is also a genotype of hypertension. It's got a lot of in essence, what we're talking about is, you know, a person who's conditioned to get the diseases of the Western lifestyle. And so, in essence, you know, these are people, they tend to be a little bit padded. They're not always obese, but they tend to be more of what Sheldon would call endomorphs. They tend to have a lot more endomorphic tissue.
Mm-hmm.
Number three is the teacher. It's an interesting genotype. It's a wiry, smallish type person, more predominantly type A, tend to have more problems with bacterial overgrowth. It's what's called a receptor type. So if you have six genotypes, two genotypes are each reactor types, that's number one and four.
Mm-hmm.
Two each are thrifty types, number two and five, which we'll get to, and then two each are receptor types, which is one and six, three and six, rather. Receptor types have problems with an excessive amount of receptors. They're sort of altruistic people. They sort of want to get along with the environment. They tend to, if anything, to have overgrowth issues with bacteria and viruses. The teacher is largely type A, tends to have problems with methylation issues. They tend to have problems with regard to how they control the overgrowth in their digestive tract. More likely prone to cancer than some of the other genotypes as well.
So, okay, type A blood would be predominant there?
Type A, yes.
Okay.
Number four is an interesting genotype. It's called the explorer.
Mm-hmm.
And when I did the statistical analysis, all the things that tended to gravitate to this genotype were very non-blood type related things, and it turns out to be one of the genotypes you can largely be by having any blood type. Although it tends to have higher incidences of Rh negative, it tends to be more left-handed. These are people who tend to have more problems with environmental sensitivities. They tend to have problems with some of the detoxification pathways. They have some difficulties, more prone to difficulties with, I guess you would say, blood and liver functions and things. They tend to, in Chinese medicine, and the description of deficient yin is a very good description of the explorer genotype.
Yeah, they sound like they accumulate kind of the mess of the world. They just keep kind of going around the horn there. Every weakness you can imagine there.
It's a funny genotype. It's the other responder genotype along with the hunter. When you do a lot of the tracing in terms of paleo serology or some of the other things you could look at with regard to ancestral DNA and stuff, it tends to be an interesting genotype. It spent a lot of time bouncing around, and so the constant change of environment may have or essentially kind of had an effect of conditioning them to be a little bit skittish around certain types of chemicals and things. Basically, it's a relatively, despite, you know, just like you would probably see in your own practice, you know, despite the fact that they're hypersensitive and prone to a lot of things, they live longer than some of the other ones as well.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, they just kind of spend their whole life basically having problems, but then when you do the final inventory, they're alive and everyone else is dead. So then you look at five is considered the warrior, which is the last of the thrifty genotypes with the gatherer. Again, it's predominantly type A, type AB. Seems to be a genotype with some unique intrauterine conditioning. It tends to be have been sensitive to changes in a lot of the fetal concentrations of oxygen and sugar, and actually had some sensitivity with regard to things like the acid balance and the early prenatal environment as well. They're relatively tall, often characteristically head-shaped. They're one of the few purely dolichocephalic genotypes, which tends to indicate that it's a genotype that was programmed very early on for a very, very effusive, expressive growth. So if you look at these people, they're massively optimized for peaking very early in life.
Oh.
So they're long-legged, they're kind of normal dolichocephalic. They're optimized with regard to nutrient usage. But if anything, it tends to actually, they kind of burn out early. They're people that have tremendous amount of fitness early in life, but tend to, in later life, tend to age a little bit more rapidly. They tend to have difficulty in controlling some of their DNA repair, and telomerase is an issue as well.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys, just if you've been dialing in, we've noticed some callers dropping in and dropping out. The number is 646-478-4847. We're going to get to your calls here in a minute because we want to make sure that, you know, Peter gets to field some of your calls.
Let me go through the final genotype.
Yeah,
and I'll do anything
we
you want.
Got a couple more. And,
that's
we'll
it. Last
that.
One's a nomad, which is actually a genotype predominantly of blood type B. It's interesting. It shows a lot of characteristics of being sensitive to, again, concentrations of oxygen in the fetal environment. Tends to be a little bit more adaptable, predilection towards viral problems. Tends, again, to have a lot of problems with dietary. They're like proteins. They're known as lectins that are interrupting metabolic functions. Interesting genotype in a lot of ways. It's relatively specific geographical distribution. So in essence, really, what we're looking at with the genotypes is, even though they have these fancy names like explorer, warrior, those are just mimetics that were basically came up to make people understand the concept easier. It doesn't mean that everybody who had that genotype was a warrior. It's just that basically the idea of understanding how it was basically developed through this kind of effect of epigenetics, we're giving it that name to make it a lot easier than to say, okay, well, this is the coalescing of, you know, 35 data points having to do with this various polymorphism and that.
Yeah, it's a shorter handle than that cephalad thing you said a minute ago, too.
Dolichocephalic?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that think I was on Wheel of Fortune a couple weeks ago.
I resemble that remark.
All right, well, it looks like a couple of callers came and left, but I want to go back and circle back and look at this from the standpoint that, you know, your books historically have been put on the diet aisle, the blood type diet, and this one too. But we know it addresses this whole spectrum of things. So what's the biggest misconception about your work that we can clear up right here and now on Naked Soma for you?
Well, thank you. The funny thing is that people are only coming very slowly to the notion, and I include physicians and other people who are involved in the field of dietetics and nutrition, coming very slowly to the notion that we can't really think in terms of very simple solutions. We're just, okay, I came up with this neat little fact, and I happen to know and expect that it's going to work in everybody, because it doesn't. You know, we can have a lot of very pat theories or, you know, general preferences. We'd like to make maybe everybody vegetarian, but the facts don't fit the bill. Maybe perhaps we'd like to make everybody paleolithic-type nutrition, but there are people that just don't do well on either one. So I love it when basically I read an article and it says, oh, you know, soy is terrible, or, you know, coconut oil is great for everybody. And it's like, it's not true. Ultimately, you have to come to grips with the fact that very often, if you plug in your political theories or your sense of personal ethics or your choices for what you think is best for the planet into your notion of what you think other people should be eating, there's going to be a lot of consternation, because you're not really talking the argument that really needs to be said, what's right for that one person. You're kind of mixing it up with a whole big cosmological theory.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, you know, the blood type diet is only looking at one gene out of 30,000, and look at the results you got, and imagine if you had access to this entire spectrum of biometric factors and things like that to influence your well-being. I think it's a little bit more than a diet book, guys. I think this is a complete rewriting of the way we look at, inheritance and the way we interact with our environment, both now and generations to come, because, as you say, if you influence your own code, your own terrain, by making better choices constitutionally, that's going to be translated down to the next generation. Maybe even affect the one you're in, that people might actually make better choices. So, you know, I mean, are you looking at a tofu turkey tomorrow, by the way, or are we going to get a real turkey on your plate?
No real turkey.
All right.
You know, actually, I think the greatest thing about the genotype book itself is that it has the promise that a person can do something rational, easy, simple, and non-expensive to actually take the hand that they were dealt to actually improve it and pass the improvements on to the next generation, which I think is a very powerful thing. And actually, if it sounds like Buck Rogers, it's not. The environment's doing this every day to people. For instance, when somebody out there who's ever smoked their first cigarette will tell you, hey, this is a very unpleasant experience.
Mm-hmm.
But when you smoke your third and fourth, and then eventually you get down to the end of your first pack, you acclimate it to something that actually is really a bad experience, all of a sudden becomes almost addictive. Well, it's not there's nothing in you that changed other than the fact that a whole bunch of genes got turned on in your liver that actually helped you break down the tobacco. That was a genetic event. So ultimately, what you're looking at in terms of the environment turning genes on and off, folks, this is going on all day long. Now, if you're going to basically just kind of take what you're having to delve and basically say, well, maybe nature knows best and I'll just have to play the odds. But there's knowledge out there now that we know that we can change some of these gene functions. It's been shown again and again and again. Single biggest influence is nutrition. So you want to look at all the things that affect gene function, activation and silencing. The single biggest influence is the one thing, the only thing, the thing that you only can do, nobody else can do for you, which is change the way you eat.
No, I mean, going into the holidays, it's the biggest message you can give people. And I know that they always focus on the weight loss and stuff like that, but the things you're talking about, the book comes out in December, right? This is a genotype
diet? Yeah, in December it's out.
Oh, okay. All right. So then, and more information about that, of course, you can go to Pete's website. It's diadamo.com, diadamo.com. It is a plethora of information, whether you're an expert, a novice, or just a curious book reader and want to know more about his work. He is literally commandeered the Wikipedia with information. I learned about box genes and all kinds of things over there. And
that's a great site. I've been all over that site. It's so well done.
It's his own universe. I mean, this is an XO with a keyboard that sings. So
amazing.
You have no idea the amount of...
I'm actually making movies now of the whole thing.
Really?
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Well, because you see a lot of the stuff that you do. The genotype diet, by the way, when somebody buys the book, there's no genetic testing required. So you don't have to spend a nickel on genetic testing in order to figure out your genotype.
Huh.
All you got to do is go out and get all the things you could make an effective tailor. You know, the tape measure, a scissor, a couple of other things. If you have an uncle in the tailing business, you're all set to go. Because all you need to do is measure a bunch of stuff. And essentially, that's the great thing about it, because genetic testing is thousands of dollars, and it tells you about the effects of single genes. But basically, when you measure phenotype, you're looking at analyzing the effect of many genes all at once.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's all, like the salutogenic well-being factor of his work compared to the pathological search for the gene marker that everyone looks for the degenerative conditions. That's the big. I always associated genes with that's it. You're marked for life. Look at you got the HLA B27, and you're doomed. And now you're saying
the problem with that mark is HLA B27 doesn't doom anybody. It's associated with maybe 30% of the people who go on to get a pathology. Somebody who has the APOE4 has a 30-some-odd% of getting Alzheimer's, but that's an expensive test. And if you do a family history and you do a good job of it, you actually get more important data than if you're in a genetic test. Because genes are polygenic. They're multiple genes. They said, you know, when they're looking for this hypothetical gene for diabetes, they're like up to 35 already.
Yeah.
You know, read all that stuff that Watson said the other day, and he was like, you know, we'll find a gene for this and find a gene for that, and we'll find a gene for this, and if you don't like the gene, you kill the kid. Okay. But basically, he's thinking like a guy who discovered DNA, which is that everything is going to be one single gene. But it can't be. You got wheat plants that have 66,000 genes. You got earthworms that got 44,000 genes, and you got human beings that have 23,000 genes. So we didn't get our ascendancy over those lower forms of life because we have more genes than they do.
Mm-hmm.
We use the same genes multiple times to do the same thing.
Wow. All right. Well, I think we got a call here. We'll get to John real quick. Maybe they can shed some light on this. Do you want to click it over there, Val?
Sure. Be happy to.
See if we got somebody here.
There you go.
Okay, you're on here with Naked Summer and Dr. Peter Diadamo. Are you there? Hello. I love this moment. Hey.
Hey.
Anyone there?
It's Jeb.
Hi, Jeb.
Oh, it's Jeb. See, I told you.
No. It was there's a different area code there.
Oh, all right. Go ahead. That was another host, so sorry.
I clicked on it.
All right, well, they came and he went. That's one of the easiest questions you'll feel there in the book tour there, Peter.
You know, it's an amazing thing to think about that. You know, we've been doing stuff. I gave a lecture to the Naturopaths University of Bridgeport.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Nixon in 1968 said, we're going to have a war on cancer. We know a lot about cancer, a lot more than we did in 1968.
Mm-hmm.
But we're nowhere near curing it. What about if you could take your family line, if your family's prone to cancer,
mm-hmm.
and work on yourself in such a way that you can pass a lowered risk of cancer in your family line?
Hmm.
Onto your offspring. Same thing with diabetes. Don't you ever take histories in your practice and Jesus, everybody in this family gets cancer, but nobody gets Alzheimer's. Or everybody gets Alzheimer's in this family, nobody gets diabetes. Well, what about if that predilection was an epigenetic inheritance?
Mm.
And there were ways that basically you could take that, that what Hahnemann, the old homeopath guy, used to call a miasm, which was a flaw or a fault line, of the fault line in that family that you could basically do something about. I think, I calculate four generations, you can take something out of a family line. And that's a lot. That's you're talking about 75 years. It may be actually 75 years. You may still be looking at these people telling you that they're going to find a cure for cancer, but if you can do something to actually root it out of the family line, why sit around and wait for a cure? You can start on this one right in your own time and place.
Yeah, and that's what miasm was about. It was about passing on these inherited taints, as they call them, which is an interesting choice of words, that you were, you know, the human stain or something. I think the caller's back. Let's give it another shot here.
Human stain. I saw that. It was a good movie. I saw that.
Exactly. Are you there this time? Naked Soma with Dr. Diadamo. Are you there? This is 0 for 2. Hello? Well, you called up, you sat on hold, and then you can't talk.
This is just a roving mail enhancement phone call you're probably getting.
Wonder what gene and type this is. Okay. All right, there and gone. All right, so, again, just wrapping up the concepts here. As they go into the holidays, if they pick up this book between Thanksgiving and the holidays, what's the number one thing they can do as far as getting started with this diet? Because sometimes these things seem overwhelming and even, like, you know, almost in their face about things that they were told information from another book, another source, this is going to take them on a different path.
It does all the thinking for you. Mark, you're a smart guy. I mean, we can sit here and discuss a lot of the statistics that went into this, and you're totally boring and unhelpful to your audience. But at the same time, it's like anything else. If you go out to an automobile showroom, yeah, somebody's going to want to take a look under the hood. But very few people are going to want to play with the camshaft, right? They just want to know where the gas pedal is.
Right.
So actually, at a certain point, same thing with this book. If you pick it up, you basically do some very simple measurements. You basically figure out which one of your genotypes are. Essentially, what you're doing is you're calculating what particular valley your marble went down. And essentially, then you actually adapt to what the constraints are that become evident by being in that valley, and you turn the constraints into avenues of opportunity.
Wow, that's the best way to sum up the work, because it's like, you're not taking a static blueprint and saying you can't change. You're thinking, this is your initial condition, now steer. And ride the wave, as it were. And you've given people a great way to kind of navigate that map, and hopefully it won't get pigeonholed, and people won't be looking for it, to lose 12 pounds by New Year's Day on the diet and stuff like that. But they will be looking at their relatives differently, looking for asymmetries. Yeah. And let me see your fingerprint.
You know, it's funny.
Thing.
I've never really done well in the. I need to get into the tuxedo by next week. People who buy diet books. I think there's simpler ways of appealing to those people.
Mm-hmm.
Telling them all the things they want to hear versus the things they need to hear.
Right.
Well,
that's fine. I write books that basically, once you pick up the book, it's got a nutritional spin, but it's got a nutritional spin in a real classic sense of nutrition, which is food is medicine, rather than, food curtailment as a way of getting into your sister's wedding looking as good as possible. Every time I've written books that I've tried to put or instill into them some element of illumination, I've never been disappointed, because I've been told that they read like what I wanted them to be, which are discussions and journeys of understanding and knowledge, rather than just, the kind of pat things that people throw into diet books nowadays.
Yeah, well, you've made my family very happy. Those books are on my shelf forever, and long after I'm, dust bunnies, they're going to be looking at your stuff, and hopefully I've influenced a couple of waves of Philippies down the line that will make some choices because of what you did for us. So my family, to talk about Thanksgiving, we're very grateful that you came into our lives when you did, and I look forward to reading this book, and wish you guys on the other end of the phone there really happy holidays.
Same
to
you and you all. And thank you for having me on your show, Mark.
Thanks,
good luck.
Doc.
Yeah. Nice to meet
Doc.
You.
Appreciate it.
You too.
Hey, take care of yourself, guys.
Yeah, have a good one. We'll see you soon.
Right
take care.
Bye.
Wow.
Wow.
I need a moment of silence after that.
Yeah,
me too. That was like going to church.
Wow. Damn.
Wow.
Very impressive.
You have to see the IMs on my screen right now, all the comments coming up from people that I know that are listening. They're totally into this. They're loving it.
Okay, we'll put our little song on here as we... Let's get some idea. What were some of the basic comments? Because I took so many notes during that talk, I don't even know where to start.
Well, things talking about their particular body shape and a funny comment about the word endomorph, which I won't reveal, and some stuff about someone not having allergies. He said he could sleep in poison ivy. But he's processing, you know, what Dr. D'Adamo was saying, and the other link is funny. I won't even tell you what she was saying, but they're loving it. It's good stuff.
Well, as we heard a couple of whispers in the background, Dr. Jeb has joined us here. And did you catch most of the interview, or just half of it? Or
I think I got about half of it.
Okay,
but I mean, it was, man, it was captivating, and
totally.
You know what I love about him is that he's not. Man, I'll tell you, I'm so tired. I'm going to get a little teeny little rant here. I'm so tired of all the, you know, the functional food people. You know, it's like you go back to Royal Lee and Standard Process, and it was like feed these people good food, and you know, then he sort of did his thing with the Standard Process, but to make whole food supplements, and then to me, what Peter just said there was, you know, this is food, and food is medicine, but he's not looking at it like. Take if a little bit is good, then a bucket must be better. He's
saying, yeah, the Elvis syndrome. Yeah, carrots are good. Let me eat carrots. Nothing but carrots. Carrots.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
I think we got a caller over there. Let's see what what they have to say here. Okay, you're on the air with Naked Summer. What do you got? Again, the silence.
Maybe there's something wrong with the phone. It wouldn't be the first time.
No, I don't know. Are you there? Yep, if you're there.
Hello.
I don't understand. Why is it when I call up and we get nothing? It's just so depressing.
But have you seen recently the news? There's been a couple different research articles about
right.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
About antioxidants and
I know
that.
That
actually,
yeah.
They're looking at that when you know that you take too many antioxidants and you so actually inhibit some of these enzymes that we have that are protective for us. In the sense of that our body's working against the oxidation because it's oxidation is a part of what we do.
Right.
And so this whole idea that you got to, you know, gobble down, you know, thousands and thousands of units of all these different antioxidants because oxidation is bad because it's rust and your body's rusting away. It's like, wait a minute. There's reduction, there's oxidation, and there's the whole thing that happens, and it's an imbalance. It's not about taking away, you know, making everything antioxidizing everything, or else the process stops. So, I think that's kind of what resonated with me with Dr. D'Adamo's work was that he's not looking to say here do a bucket of this, and it sort of harkens back to what to me where my heart always lies is with you know Standard Process and the whole food idea, you know, not to promote the supplement company, but just what Royal Lee talked about and Weston A. Price talked about and, you know, Dr. Page, all those guys were sort of at the same time looking and saying, you know, people that eat good food do well and people that don't eat good food don't do well. And it really kind of ends there. And so what Dr. D'Adamo's done is figured out what's good food for you. And that's pretty cool.
I think, does the caller, did they get through?
No.
No? It's just not there. Okay, I'm just looking at the thing and seeing if there was... He, like I said, he's unique in the sense that he's not trying to preach. He's discovered, you know, the founding youth, but he has discovered a way to understand the relationship between self and surroundings. So essentially, it is a somatic diet because he's feeding the body what resonates with that environment, and he's giving you a strategy for it. I mean, when he was describing certain genotypes, I was thinking, oh, they must be mostly phylo. It was just well popping for me as he was talking. I wish we had another hour to go through that. That was amazing.
Well,
yeah, me too.
We'll have to have him back, and maybe there's a book there.
The Mimo type diet or the Soma type diet or something. I don't know.
Yeah, there you go.
We can write that one.
Right.
All right, well, I'm going to take, in lieu of the Somascopes this week, because we went so long with Dr. D here, I'm just looking for this. We have a commercial for our product as we want to share with you guys as we get into the holidays here, because it's all well and good to... Read Dr. D's book, and we encourage you to do that. We just want you to make sure that you can do it in sanity. Insanity. Get it? So since I'm scrolling up and down and I can't find it, why don't you hit it there up there, Gene?
Yeah, if I knew what you called it, I could probably find it.
Well, it has SC at the end.
Okay. All right. That'll give me a hint. Hold on.
There it is.
You got it?
Yep.
Okay, here it comes.
See how it comes out.
Hey,
hope you like it, guys.
Do me a favor and answer this
question. Oh, you got to turn it up.
How will your life be different and better a month from now?
There's ways to guess at it.
You could.
All right. Let me start that again.
Put it up. Probably at 150.
All right then. We worked hard on this, so we're gonna just indulge ourselves.
That's
here.
Right. Oh, there it is.
Hey, Sapes, do me a favor and answer this question.
How will your life be different and better a month from now?
There's ways to guess at it.
You could call a psychic or consult the oracle.
Or you could
follow the moon.
That's right, Sapiens. Us radicals at Naked Soma have taken our act on the road with you.
Just go to the site somaspace.org and click on the link at the top of the homepage.
That'll take you to the page of our brand new 30-day emotional makeover audio program called
The Somatic Companion.
Listen, we know you're fed up with humanity, so we designed a program to help you rise above it all.
Tell them what they get to know.
Everyone craves the same basic things from life at 6 years old, as you do at 66 years old. The unseen force that binds us to our behavior is our emotions.
We've assembled 15 years of cutting-edge research into a user-friendly series of 7 to 10-minute daily audios that help you develop something called positive physiology.
Mm-hmm. And by riding the waves of positive physiology, you'll naturally reconnect with your self-extreme, the appetite for change.
It's moon over matter.
Blast off is a click away. All right, how about that?
We need a little applause. Where's a little applause?
Broadcasting Hall of Fame there.
Yeah.
Wow. All right, this caller, this three times. I just got to see if he's there. Are you there this time, caller? Hello? You see? This is my frustration in life. Well, at least this week we got on the air. There was no parade of...
No, there was.
There was Jewish music? Well, that one woman took over my phone. Yes, I remember
that. It was either that or it was something bleeding through from another... Which one was it?
Someone in traffic on 95 got through?
That was so annoying.
Well, let's get Dr. Jeb's tip of the week here as we get close to the top of the hour here.
This week, it's real simple. I've said this a couple times before, but coming into the holiday season that we are now approaching, and in fact, just a few hours away, living with a lot of gratitude and thanks for all that we have out there, and going back and checking on your domains, and seeing where you are, just following the coherence calendar. And for the commercial of the day, which is part of the tip of the day, is go to the Somatic Companion so you know what we're talking about. So you go to Naked Soma, somaspace.org, and follow the instructions there. And check out Dr. Diadamo's new book, The Genotype Diet.
Okay. All right. So we got a quote this week. Is more than help.
We do have we have a quote.
Okay.
What is food to one is to others bitter poison.
Wow. All right. Mm-hmm. That's right out of the old deal there. And I just wanted to follow that up because there's another quote I liked here that kind of got through my wickets. We are quite literally what we eat as well as what our parents and grandparents ate, which frightens me to no end. All right. So thank you, everybody, for joining us tonight. If you're new to the show, be sure to become a registered listener to Blog Talk Radio and come on back and archive the whole catalog of Naked Soma hijinks. And we just want to send you guys out. Well, first, I have two quotes here. Let me see if I can get them both in.
When you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
Yeah, we'll try it better next week, guys. And we have another guest next week you're going to love, and hopefully... everyone have a safe and healthy Thanksgiving, and we will see you again next week here on the air, Naked Soma Travel Light.
Bye.
Night, guys.
Welcome to Marathon. May I help you?
Yes.
How may I help you?
You can start by wiping that fucking dumbass smile off your rosy fucking cheeks. Then you can give me a fucking automobile. A fucking Datsun, a fucking Toyota, a fucking Mustang, a fucking Buick. 4 fucking wheels and a seat.
I really don't care for the way you're speaking to me.
And I really don't care for the way your company left me in the middle of fucking nowhere with fucking keys to a fucking car that isn't fucking there. And I really didn't care to fucking walk down a fucking highway and across a fucking runway to get back here to have you smile at my fucking face. I want a fucking car right fucking now.
May I see your rental agreement?
I threw it away.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy, what?
You're fucked.
Get out of the safe, everybody.